today we're visiting with Jess Sacedo here at Rail River Folk School in beautiful downtown Bemidji. And so, well, you know, Bemidji is pretty. So welcome. Thanks for joining us today, Jess.
Thanks for coming, you guys. It's good to see you here.
I really just was excited about capturing the story about the folk school. I'm pretty excited about what you guys are doing here and how did it even get started and what are your dreams to the future or what's going on now. So let loose.
How long has it been here? I was trying to figure out how long have I been coming to Rail River and I can't remember.
Well, it's been sort of a river of development, right? So it started off as a drip of an idea, like that was in the fall of 2010. And actually it was a friend of mine had a neighbor, and the neighbor and I got to talking one day, and he said, "Yo, you ought to come down and see my warehouse. I think you'd really appreciate it." Because I was spouting off on some big ideas about beans and seeds and some other kind of Mother Earth news kind of stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And he said, "Oh, you should really come and see the building." Well, it turned out he had an office that was all of 10 by 10, 10 by 15. And at the time, I was a new mom, and best friend in Bemidji is Rochelle Carpenter. She's also somebody that was interested in renting an office. And I said, "Hey, I live in a tiny house and you live in a tiny house. Do you want to rent an office to have a little space to do some brainstorming around what it would look like to have a little community gathering spot?" Because we both had been born and raised in the Bemidji area and then gone off to live in Minneapolis and kind of see the city life, and both came back here for our different reasons. And my reason was definitely, you know, fall in love, get married, have a baby kind of stuff, want to be close to mom and dad. But the idea of having this little office that we could kind of sprout some of the ideas, I had really committed myself to stay-at-home momming, and also the idea of sustainability, because brought this kid into the world and I thought, how am I going to teach this kid the stuff that is really important? And I didn't even know what was really important, except that I had arrived at the idea when I thought about my own life, my own childhood and growing up, and the things that really instilled strength and just happiness into my life were being with my grandparents on the farm, in the garden, being with my mom in the woods, outdoors, horseback riding, things that really weren't a part of my daily life. And I really didn't have the skills, but those people, you know, my grandparents having passed on, and knowing, though, that those people were still around in the Bemidji area, mm-hmm. knowing that there were so many different rich pieces of our past that really would be good for a kid to know, mm-hmm. even if it was just in the effort of getting outside, but really about having that continuity where you might learn something that could potentially save your life. And I'll be honest, I really did have like that sort of scope of being an environmental activist mm-hmm. from my teens, and I kind of lost that in my 20s because I gave up hope, but my kid, my being a mom and being in a family really renewed my commitment. I got to make this world a better place if I'm going to bring kids into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we really started off with this tiny little office and one big whiteboard and a whole bunch of ideas. I'm kind of a systems thinker, so I was like, how am I going to teach this kid? Who do I know that knows what? What do I want to do and what do I miss from the city that I can't get in Bemidji? So it came down to good food, gardening, cool crafts, good music, fresh art, you know, people that I knew were out in the woods, but I'm like, how are we going to get them into town? Well, of course, everybody thinks that they can just write a grant and make it all happen, right? And I had some experience. I'd worked at the tribal college for a few years and got a little taste of the sustainable living programming that was going on through the community ed office. Had seen a little scope into the University of Minnesota Extension and Sustainable Development Partnership. And I got really inspired, and I was just young enough to think I could just think this up and get it funded. So that was, I mean, that's really in a nutshell what happened, is that we started off with putting on the whiteboard, if we were to create a hub of all these activities, what are the spokes that have to be put in place? And I was kind of reverse engineering it in my mind around what a community used to look like. You know, if you look at this warehouse, this building was actually a fruit warehouse that was the distribution center for foods coming in and foods going out off the railroad tracks in downtown Bemidji. And this corridor being one of the first economic food corridors, and this building being the storage and management of that food. So across the tracks was the depot where people would come mm-hmm. in and out, and over there would be the creamery, the butcher mm-hmm. shop, the beer bottling place. You know, there was the grain mill, the seed sure. supply. You know, this was actually all the food from this area was sourced really within 100 miles of here. And my grandparents were a part of that. My grandparents, my great-grandparents, owned one of the first general stores over in Shovlin. My grandpa was one of the first farm-to-school contracted beef growers for the Carr Lake School. And just being here in downtown and near the river and near the water, I really started to re-envision, like, you know, if we really were just coming out of this time, so this was not that long after the economic recession, had a child, you know, right after the sort of recovery, and I was like, what would relocalized food and family and community really look like? I started to see the disconnection that I experienced in the city as ultimately a baseline problem around health and wellness and just being disconnected from nature, from our food system, from our education system, all these things. I wasn't perfectly clear on how to do it, but I knew that was part of the thing that A, made me leave the city and also made me leave Bemidji as a teenager, like just wanting to create something that was a little more full, you know?
Yeah.
Overall, like the end game for us is always just to maintain our sort of independent spirit here. You know, we're not a traditional school. We're not a public school. We're not a charter school. We are really community driven. We are really people powered. We have no outside funding. We've only received a few grants. And right now we are just a collective of people as Rail River Folk School. We're core volunteers and we're always trying to find, kind of going back to those critical spokes to make the wheel spin around the hub, is like finding people that can bring their own robust skills to share, whether that's an actual folk school class or maybe you like to do accounting. If anybody likes to do accounting, you can come on over. You know, we'll take that kind of volunteer too. And
I love to do accounting.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
Oh my goodness.
We
need to talk.
Is that a weird thing I would ever want to do?
I love paperwork. I love doing that kind of stuff.
Well, I think that's kind of our development here, is that looking at that organic sort of symbiotic way you can develop relationships. And once you start to find things that we can all bring into community and everybody can do their shiny star thing and support sort of that wheel to spin. And sometimes, you know, it feels like it's just a little part, or sometimes it maybe doesn't feel like a perfect fit. But really, that's what we try to do, is like create the space where you can bring in your talents and we can support you with space that maybe otherwise you wouldn't be able to do something. You wouldn't be able to do, you know, your first time folk singing. You know, maybe this is a good place to do that, you know. We also try to say yes as much as we can. We try to stick our necks out a little bit. I sometimes say we stick our necks out for a living. You know, like, we say yes to young hip-hop shows. We say yes to shake tents and smudging. You know, we say yes to things that maybe wouldn't fit into a normal quote-unquote conference room or a classroom. You know, we've had a lot of just really good feedback from community, and I'm really trying to be fully explanatory when people come in and say, this is a community center. This is a DIY space. This is a place where you move your own tables. You also put the tables back. Yeah. You know, these are things that when you start to give people an opportunity to buy in, to be a part, to enroll in something just a little bit bigger, maybe even just a little bit outside of their normal comfort zone, people start to see that authenticity, and that becomes trust. And I believe that trust is kind of a currency that we run on here.
Definitely so. I don't know too many places where, you know, like I had to have some office space. My place where my office was, they were shutting down and I needed to have some place. I need to go to work in the morning. I can't work at home. I need to go to a place so I can focus. And I talked to Rocky and I said, hey, you know, do you mind if I hang out there for a week? And she's like, no, no problem. Here's the code to go in. I'm like, I felt like weird, like having the code to enter this beautiful space, you know?
Right.
But at the same time, I was like, wow, she trusts me with the code, you know? And it was so
She probably changed it after you were done.
That's what we tell everybody.
I won't mention the code. Like, I forgot it. I can't remember anything anyway. But I mean, like, that was, it's a place of trust, you know, and we've been here, and it's just like, you know, when you go someplace else and you rent their conference room or whatever, they're like always checking, you know, and like I rented a space from Leech Lake one time, and they said, you know, clean it. You got to clean it and you get 50% of whatever you know the down payment was back. And we did clean it. We scrubbed that thing. It looked better than when we went in. But they said no, they weren't going to give me the money back because they said there was a piece of tape on the floor. And, you know, Andreas was the one that mopped the floor. And I'm like, was there tape on the floor? And he goes, well, yeah, but I didn't put it there. So I thought maybe they were going to do something and they had marked something. So I left it.
Right.
And then boom, no money back. You know, I could never see you guys doing that.
Right.
You know, that was...
Well, I mean, our system tends to fail sale in the way that sometimes there's tape on the floor for 2 months, you know?
And nobody knew who put it there or why.
Right? Or it just didn't get around to it. And I think that's something that we do run into a certain level of, you know, we have in full explanation of how this place works, is that myself, my husband Saul, and Rochelle Rocky Carpenter, we own this as an LLC. We are outright owners, right? Mm-hmm. And everything that we do is basically either run as a direct rental for a wedding, a graduation. That's through our property ownership. Mm-hmm. Everything that's done as Rail River is time that's donated. And so that's, you know, that's how it works. And we end up where it's not a moneymaker at this time. We try to do other things to offset the overhead. But when it comes down to it, this place is very imperfect. And that's why I can't rent it out to a wedding person for what a wedding venue would charge, $2,000-$3,000 sometimes, because it's that level of imperfection that doesn't allow us to raise the prices. But it's also that level of imperfection that allows us real interaction. And I don't really cater to the $3,000 bride.
No.
This is a community center, not a wedding venue. However, sometimes the wedding venues help pay bills.
Right.
You know, and so, but it is finding that right wedding party that's willing to come in and understand that there's a certain level of imperfection that actually, again, leads to the authenticity of the experience. And I feel like that's what Rail River is. It is the experience.
It is.
It is.
It's very much so.
The atmosphere here is just, you feel at home when you walk through the doors.
We have a set of pretty open-ended rules that we really try to expect from everybody to show up as their best person. We try to be really cognizant of that. Not only is this a shared space with a lot of lack of walls sometimes, that's a place where kids are going to be involved, where there's going to be different cultures, that we really try to remind people, you not only show up as your best person, but be willing to take a little chance, be willing to go out and ask a question, go ahead and negotiate something when something's not working right. Oh, your music's too loud, can you wait to this time? You know, we try to navigate those little things, like, can you maybe not smudge while the person here is sensitive to smoke? You know, those mm-hmm. those little things can so easily be worked out if you go ahead and say it up front. And we have a list of things, you know, best for all, harm to no one. You know, we bring in principles that are kind of cross-cultural that just really speak to the dignity of holding each other in compassion and in the best space. And a lot of that sounds like really lofty and a little bit cheesy, but when it comes down to it, finding those common things, it creates a space of equity, you know, where an equity in the sense that people are equal, but also that you're invested here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you have a voice and you have a say, and it's not always easy, man, sometimes we've had strife here, you know, sometimes we've had little conflicts that create sort of a challenge to this system.
Mm-hmm.
And working through those, and I, sometimes I call it slow cooking. Sometimes we gotta see... Sometimes we gotta see where the things, you know, simmer down a little bit and then marinate on that for a minute and then come back to how's it taste now?
Yeah.
What do we need to change? What do we need to add? What do we need to not put in the pot next time? You know? And as that's grown and as we've expanded, we've almost completely filled the building now. And we're finding that, you know, shared space is not for everybody. Shared office, open office. But those that crave it, want it, are a little different animal. And they work really well in this setting, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of times I feel like it's come from people that are maybe from a non-traditional family setting. Like me, I'm an only child, was, you know, in a home where it was mostly me and my mom, went to see my dad now and again. But my family was really my friends growing up. Those people have all dispersed by now. But what I see here is that a lot of those same types of people gather around this as center. And we have recording artists, we have digital artists, we have video artists. We have very traditional artists like basket makers, weavers, sewers, people that are gardeners, beekeepers. We have boaters, we have bikers, we have motorcycle gang. You know, we have like everybody can gather here. And we have motorcycle gang that's Christian. You know, we have like... We have activists, we have protesters, we have speakers, we've had churches, we've had just about everything you can imagine here. And to find that, oh, it turns out that every single person is really happy to contribute to healthy families, healthy towns, clean food, clean water, clean air. These are things that, guess what? We all really need.
Right.
And when you can start to meet some of those needs in new and creative and fun ways that are engaging across cultures, generations, families, you start to fill some of these wants and needs in us as a human population of a small town, and you start to see that it can really impact health. And we're getting attention, I mean, not even requested attention. We get attention from newspaper, from our economic development team, from our downtown city planners. You know, when stuff happens in community, Mm-hmm. People come here to say, what do we do?
Yeah.
You know, when there's like, when there's something that is feels unjust socially, environmentally, people come here and say, what do you know? And it's like, I'm surprised. You know, we've had some turnouts to events that I've actually had to close the door because we're at capacity. Mm-hmm. And those events have been environmental justice, social justice.
Mm-hmm.
Not a rock concert. Well, one rock concert.
I was at one of those. You said you can come in because that guy left.
Right? And here's the thing is that I think you'll find, and almost to a fault, you'll find that sometimes there'll be a time when somebody will come and really want to host something, do something here. And if I know them and they've volunteered here before, or they've shown up before, or they've taken a class here before, I will give them the Fokker rate. You know, I give them the rate of like, hey, this is the least we can rent that space for and not actually negative lose money. But we will do it for you because I know that you've showed up in the past and you will show up for this even more because it's you.
Yeah.
Because it's your deal. It's your heart. It's your head. It's your guts.
Yeah.
You're putting it on the line. We'll put it on the line for you. And I mean, like I said, it's to a fault. Sometimes my business partners are kicking me in the butt because they're saying, wait, what now? How much? And where? And who? What? You know, but it ends up being where we've managed to be alive here since 2010. We have a person that is contract for deeding this building. He's basically like, he gets our mission so much and he comes and checks in and gives me hugs. And if I get to the point where I'm a little bit worried about things, he's worried too. He's right there worried, but he gets it. And it is that commitment of like, this is a startup mindset. This is like a Google campus without any funding, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so looking at it from that perspective and then really looking at how can we keep growing an actual economy here that is sort of like little income streams. The first thing we're doing is anchor office tenants. So that's what I have to give props is like anchor office tenants have been ultimately artist studios for a long time at first, you know, and then we've had health and wellness. So like yoga, movement arts, belly dancing. Those are some of the first people that saw the beauty of this space.
Mm-hmm.
And then Indigenous Environmental Network, Simone, Tom, they were early adopters. They got it right away. Started jumping in on the garden space, started renting offices, Region 2 Arts Council, their interim office. And that's sort of like, again, hubbing back to like-minded driven individuals in the same space and continuing to see what emerges without actually having a plan. Most businesses could never run that way. And that, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
It's not a normal thing. It's very much a risk. And you know, we owe a lot to our community in that they've allowed us to be sort of, we're not so sure. I mean, the very first thing that happened was we had ACLU was the first tenant that we ever had, Minnesota Greater Racial Justice Project. They had the Art From Within show, and within a few months after that, they had the open house for holiday season, right? Well, the Bemidji Pioneer came, and they came for the ACLU events, but they heard about what we're doing and wanted to know, and they interviewed myself and Rocky separately. Well, do you know that they printed like 7 columns of every single thing that we said, every idea, every... every big concept. And so the phone really started ringing on its own. And we're like, sure, we'll meet with you. Sure, crafter. Sure, farmer. Sure, farmer's market, you know? And that's really where the ball started rolling. We had our first local foods meal with about 25 people that we invited as potential instructors. And we laid out a sort of a concept of, you know, you help us with classes and we'll pay you, you know, X amount of dollars. And hopefully that class is full. We had about 40 classes that first year and a half. Overall, that's the roots of where the people came from. And then just, you know, seeing sort of the evolution even of what is going on in health and wellness and environmental action. We started getting different statewide health improvement meetings. We had Food Sovereignty Council.
Yeah.
You know, different things came through here. And they've not all survived. They've not all fully fruited, but they've all kind of contributed to the to the growth.
Well, that's an ongoing thing, the environmental justice and the social justice issues. I was reading a book. It's a pretty good book. It's called Blessed Unrest.
Okay.
And all the grassroots things that come up in the world
mm-hmm.
are around social justice or environmental justice. There's some merging of the two, which mm-hmm. they kind of, to me, are not separate things.
Mm-hmm.
But they said that oftentimes what happens is that, you know, a movement will get going and it will become strong. And then government, whether it's federal, state, local, or whatever type of government it is, catches wind that this movement is growing. And so they take snippets of it. They take the buzzwords from that. And then they start like funding that or trying to address that. And they take away the power of the grassroots mm-hmm. movement. So I'm wondering, like, from this perspective, have you seen or do you see any of that happening with any of the movements that are coming through here? Someone trying to co-opt what you're doing. And do you feel like you need to guard that? Or do you feel like it's going to move and grow on its own anyway, so you don't feel the need to be overly protective of it?
Well, I don't really have the capacity to protect. And grassroots to me is, it has to be for the people, by the people.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen some co-opting go on. I've seen some ownership being both delineated, usurped, delegated. And when I see that, and I see it coming from places that have more resources than us, sometimes it hurts.
Yeah.
We've had programs that have been like, wow, I see that you really wrote us into this grant and you really got our voice and you got my letter of recommendation, and then I never saw you again.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, that takes my time and mm-hmm. it takes my resources, and I'm not a scarcity thinker. I have experienced scarcity thinkers in the past. I'm not about slicing a pie smaller. I'm really about baking a bigger pie.
Yeah.
Actually, it's not pie, you know, and like, and when it comes down to it, it's like, okay, so if you're going to make a movement, and the grassroots tends to be the most sort of fundamental thing we try to do here.
Mm-hmm.
But as grassroots grows bigger, it's going to influence the grass tops all the way to the White House, hopefully someday, right? That's our goal, right?
Okay. Maybe.
I mean, in terms of organizing, everybody has a comfort zone. And not everybody's comfortable living where we live. I feel like there's current galvanization across the grassroots and those that have never been active before. I mean, sometimes I see activists show up here and I'm like, you know, this is interesting. You just heard about this, but it's been going on here in Bemidji for 30 years. But I'm glad you're here and let me tell you about it, you know?
Maybe they just moved here.
They maybe just moved here. You're right, Jared. You know, and it's like, I tend to be one of those organizers that I really try to be inclusive as opposed to exclusive. And that's hard. And
it is really hard. I know that's like, I've known you for quite a while, and that's the one thing about you that I admire. And it's the one thing about, like, usually when you admire someone, you try to do that. And I can't do that. I'm like more guarded than you are. You're like, let's just visit with them and see what happens, you know? And I'm like, do I want to visit with them?
Right.
So that's kind of...
I think it's cool because I'm more like you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's just go out there, see what's going to happen.
I truly admire that in you. I wish I could be more like that.
Hi, but I mean, I also feel like part of my job is to make people feel comfortable enough to get them in that space that they're willing to get into that 10% of uncomfortable, right?
Yeah.
That lean in. I mean, a lot of the work that hasn't been done yet is because not enough people are comfortable in that space.
Right.
And now it is a minority movement. And I hate using the word minority, but I'm going to be really direct here. When you start marrying minorities, and I did that. I was kidding. Ah, my Mexican husband. Oh, sad. But when you start talking about, okay, if I'm going to take the Greenpeace movement, that's where I got started in environmental activism.
Me too.
You know, I used to pound the pavement for Greenpeace. Got doors slammed. I thought I was going to be killed a couple times. Okay, start taking that kind of thought. You start taking a social justice movement. You start talking about the rights of those that are underrepresented, misrepresented. And I don't care if you're talking LGBTQ, if you're talking about Black Lives Matter, if you're talking about Native Lives Matter, if you're talking about non-GMO, if you're talking about farmer school. These are all minority thought movements.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start realizing that there's things and values that rise above culture and commerce, and it is like those things I mentioned earlier, like happy, healthy homes where people feel safe and they have clean water and a warm home that doesn't cost them an arm and a leg, that supports life instead of degrades life. And I don't care if you're talking about because that's a really healthy home that's built that way, or because it has culture and custom and tradition infused into it, or if it just has a space for people to be open and honest. When you start talking about putting all those pieces together for the least served in our community, mm-hmm. the least represented, you change that community. And that is a philosophy that I understood as a teenager, but I couldn't articulate. And I have been able to articulate. And it's basically because Rail River has afforded me a few resources,
mm-hmm.
a couple of grants. I got to go here and get leadership training. I got to Blandon scoop me up, and I got to spend a week with 30 awesome folks from 3 reservations in a room with a bunch of food, you know? And I got to learn, like, the thing is that you start talking about, hey, how's your family? What do you like to cook?
Uh-huh.
You know, what do you do?
Right.
You know, what's your favorite food? What's the story? Tell me your story. And you authentically engage, and then you show back up, not just that one time, but you really show up again, like, hey, come on over to Rail River. We can do that. there, you know, we can make that soup, you know, we can crochet, we can, you name it, yep, we can do it.
And do whatever.
And to give people, it's just a little bit of a, systems thinking is what it actually is.
Mm-hmm.
And systems thinking is actually, you know, being rooted to your community, being rooted to the place, land-based lifestyle. Those are indigenous qualities. Those are also in ancient cultures. Kaizen thinking is Japanese culture for continuous improvement. Those are design thinking elements. Design thinking is like a huge department at Stanford University.
Yeah, it is.
But if you go back to it, I mean, and this is going to be me sounding like a white girl kind of being funny about it, but I started to look at the degradation of the environment as our number one threat to my children's lives, right?
Uh-huh.
When I started to see the solutions that I see, food systems improvement, energy systems improvement, community-based solutions, all those things, actually they've been done in indigenous communities around the world for millennia. You know, research and development's done, people.
Yeah.
Like, we can't reverse the clock, but we can revitalize the things that make a lot of sense for everybody.
Right.
And I'm really about that localized movement and finding those traditions that not only build bridges, but are actually like building bricks out of mud and water that build bridges.
Right.
You know, it's not just like, oh, Shirley, you know, oh, Sharon, I'm going to, you know, come over and sit in your sewing class or your carving class. I don't have to be there every time, but to know that you guys can come here and be doing what you want to do and sharing that knowledge, and hopefully other folks that are here that maybe you didn't know before would come and join you, or the folks that you bring would come back or have their kids' graduation party here. And it's that kind of resilience. It's a little better than sustainable. My hope is that because we've been able to pull this off for a number of years, that this language, this kind of approach to community building will actually be adopted by a city program. And I'm on every comp plan steering committee
meeting. I know you are. It's when you didn't show up, I'm like, Lord knows what she's doing.
Today I was coughing my cool lungs out, but, you know, and I'm also a air quote stay-at-home mom, you know?
Right. And I imagine you got to get your garden in, and there's all kinds of other things that you're doing.
I'll be really honest, Rail River has taken away some of those pieces that brought me here. It's taken away some of that, but it's, for me, it's the larger long-term investment. Mm-hmm. And that there's other people that are much better at gardening. You know, there's other means that my kids can garden. It doesn't necessarily have to be with me, you know?
Right.
And I feel some of those pieces, I feel a little bit of, ooh, my heart, like, ooh, my, you know, I'm not quite on mission, but I'm like, wait, this is, you know, Isaiah has an auntie in Simone in the garden, and he would never have an auntie if it wasn't for that garden, you know, and they've bonded over seeds and bees. Like, I couldn't even force my kid to like something that much, but naturally it occurs with Simone, you know?
Yeah, that community growing of a child, we did that with Andreas.
Right?
Andreas was raised by
a community
of people. He is the young man that he is because of that community. Right. And it was really fun because we just had his one and only birthday party. He's 25th. We had a birthday party for him, surprise. Oh. And he didn't know what was happening, but she had asked him, like, because if you were going to have a birthday party, because she told him he couldn't afford it, like, who would you invite?
Mm-hmm.
And it was so interesting to see this, like, old people, kids, you know, non-natives, natives. It was just this beautiful community of people. And so then we contact, can you make it? Can you make it? You know? And he had this big birthday party with, like, 35, 40 people showing up.
Right.
And just to look at the room and see who he loved and think about that community that raised him, that was really a beautiful thing.
Right.
I mean, he had a great birthday party, but for me it was more of a like, wow, there's a lot of people in his life that helped him be who he has become.
Yeah. Okay, so rich. Yeah. And it's such a strong tapestry, right? And
yeah,
it's
like, it is.
It's like the biodiversity of nature. Like, it's when you put those strengths together and those different components of what a person needs to learn in life. They don't teach you that stuff in school.
No.
Not only do you not learn accounting, but they don't teach you how to be happy. They don't teach you how to cook. They don't teach you how to be self-reliant. They don't teach you, like, you know, social emotional intelligence. They don't really teach you much the stuff that keeps you in a good place in your life.
No, they don't.
No, they don't.
And so that's kind of, I'm trying to rekindle that. And sometimes I say we put the town back in town hall, you know?
Yeah.
And like,
that's the end of this show. Join us next week as we continue our conversation with Jess Sato about Rail River Folk School and the social and environmental justice movement in the Bemidji area. See you next week. This program has been funded by the Legacy Arts, Culture, and Heritage Fund of Minnesota.